Pledge of Allegiance. Here today, can you lead the floor? Excuse me, lead the charge, please.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everyone. Director, if we do roll call.
Good, and this is exciting because we kept it one person. We have everyone in the room. Hasn't been this way in 2 years, I would say. Sheriff Dannell's in the room. Our new board member, Ben Cook, in the room. Mr. Johnson in the room. Ms. Kelly in the room. Professor Robinson in the room. Colonel Silbert in the room. Chief Vasquez in the room. Ms. Weiss in the room. Chief Williams, you're on the phone. I can see you. Can you hear us?
I can. Thank you.
Good morning. And Deputy Director Perfiri in the room. Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Director. Opening comments from anybody? Ms. Weiss, good to see you. Good
Thank
to see you back up here.
Great to be here.
And we have a new member. You want to introduce yourself and welcome aboard?
My name is Benjamin Cook. I go by Ben. I'm from Pinal County Sheriff's Office. Excited to be here. There's not much more to me.
Welcome to the learning curve.
Deputy Cook's being modest. He's a 27 or 28-year veteran of Pinal County. When I heard about him and recommended him to the governor's office, he came with glowing reviews from his not only his chain of command but from peers around the state. So, again, I think he's being overly modest, but we're really happy to have him on board.
Thanks. Again, congratulations. Welcome aboard. And so any other comments from board members before we begin? Again, it's good to see everybody back in place here. Director, I'll come over back to you for inductions, presentations, and announcements.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to keep all my announcements and reports brief this morning because, as you know, we have a fairly full agenda. So just a couple of different things. Obviously, we already introduced Ben Cook. Monique Cody is your independent advisor for all final action cases. We're going to pull one case from your agenda. If you could look at your new cases, it's case 2021-216. It's item number 6 on my agenda, and it's for Adam Schoen. We're going to pull that, and you'll see it on a future board agenda. I made a note here that I had, for the first time ever, I had no new employees to introduce, but I was mistaken. Michael Rodriguez, there he is. I see him. Michael came to us from the Tempe Police Department. He's got a wealth of experience in basic training. He's going to be working with Lori Waite and her team on the basic training side of the house. I'm really excited to have him. He's jumped in with 2 feet working on the new curriculum, academy inspections, the whole nine yards. So we're really happy to have him, that he was willing to leave Tempe and come work this here at Arizona Post. But in addition to my notes, what I was going to say, I didn't have any new people to introduce. I will have more people in the next month or so. We're looking at bringing on 2 additional compliance specialists, as well as one additional person in our advanced training side of the house. So, again, I think the grander scheme, the grander plan is all coming together. And, again, just putting the right people in the right places to make sure that we're operating as efficiently and effectively as possible. With that, I'll end my announcements, but happy to take any questions, or I can move into my director report if that's what you'd like, Mr. Chairman.
Comments, questions? Hearing none. Go ahead, Director.
Okay, moving on. Last year, the board gave us permission to move forward on making rule changes regarding Arizona Post. Those are reaching the final stages. Early the first week of May, we have the meeting of the Governor's Regulatory Review Council. We're hoping that we'll get a pass through them, and then the rules will take effect. Some rules will take effect immediately. Others will take effect 60 days after, or 60 or 90 days after they're approved. We're also working on, we talked a couple meetings ago about creating some supplemental rules regarding instructor certifications as well as continuing versus proficiency training moving forward. We're going to be bringing those back to the board here in the near future and getting that through the process as well. CJF funding, over the last couple months, our CJF funding has continued to decline. We are now, unfortunately, we have not met our average monthly expectations for this fiscal year. We're still in really good financial position, again, historically being fiscally conservative on how we spend money and very fiscally responsible. We're still in good position, but again, our CJF funding continues to decline, moving into the reason why the legislature is looking at pulling us out of CJF funding and putting us into appropriated funding. It's It was passed out of the Senate. It's sitting at the House now, waiting for a budget. And when the budget's approved, then they'll go back and they'll pass the. What I'm told is the bill will then go for a full vote. And if it passes, we will be moved out of permanently out of CJIP funding and moved into annual normal governor's appropriated funding. So I'll keep you apprised as that moves through the process. There's still no word on appropriated funding for academy reimbursements. As I talked about several meetings ago, we were advised due to Proposition 207 funding that that would be used by agencies to reimburse academies for their successful graduates. There was talk that they were going to try to reverse that and give us appropriated funding to handle, to pay academies for reimbursement. However, I haven't seen any traction on that. We're ready to operate however we need to beginning July 1st. But I just wanted to keep you apprised that where we're at. And just as you know, there is a bill running through the legislature now that would add additional agencies to that Proposition 207 funding, one of them being DPS, others being the three state universities, as well as tribal agencies, because they were all excluded when that when Prop 207 passed, where the money went to different police agencies. A couple other things we're doing is Lori Waite and her team continue to work with different regions of the state who want to begin their own academies. I think currently we're working with three different groups that want to begin a basic academy. So again, Lori and her team have been phenomenal going out, meeting with the different stakeholder groups, discussing what is needed to start an academy. And they're all three of them are in different stages of the process, but we'll keep you apprised as we get closer. If any of them submit the final paperwork and Lori's team does all the final approvals, we'll get that in front of the board. So it's exciting to see that other people want to engage in the basic academy curriculum, the basic academy model. Lori and her team also continue to work with academy inspections. Just recently, they've been out to several academies, identified potential issues, and through their relationships they built over the last year or so, they were able to resolve most of those issues right away just by giving advice and soliciting feedback from the academies themselves. So again, building those relationships on the front end make our job on the back end so much easier. And Mr. Chairman, with that, I'll go ahead and end my comments. Again, I want to keep them brief today, but as always, I'm happy to answer any questions you or any of the board members might have.
Thank you, Director. Thank you, staff. Any questions, comments?
So, Mr. Chairman, this is Jerry, Chief Williams. Just a quick comment to the director. So as everyone is aware, we're having hiring challenges and training challenges. So we've kind of made some pivots in our training academy, and kudos to Post for walking us with us and through this process. So I didn't want that to go without being said for the director and his team. Thanks, Matt.
Chief, we appreciate that. And we appreciate the open dialogue that Assistant Chief Brian Chapman's been having with Ben, Lori, and the rest of the staff here. Again, I applaud your efforts in looking at doing things differently. We want to help you as best we can.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you, Director. Any other comments? All right, moving on. Agenda item number D, consent agenda. Any comments on the consent agenda? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Jamie Kelly, I move to accept the consent agenda.
Thank you, Jamie. Do I hear a second?
Chief Oskey, second.
Thank you, Chief. Many seconds, I like it. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, signify by saying nay. Chair votes aye, motion carries. Next agenda item, Department of Public Safety driving track certification for basic peace officer course. Back to you, Director, on that comment.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this is fairly straightforward. DPS requested the use of a different driving track for their basic academy curriculum. Per our rules, those have to be inspected. Lori Waite and her team of SMEs went out, inspected the track, had no issues, and they recommend approval to allow DPS to use this track for their basic academy curriculum.
Comments, questions? Do we need a motion?
We do, sir.
We do need a motion. Hearing no discussion, I'll entertain a motion. Chief?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Jerry Williams. I move that we grant authority for DPS to utilize the track as stated in the agenda.
Thank you, Chief. Do I hear a second?
Second. Lisa Weiss.
Thank you, Ms. Weiss. Any further discussion?
I'll recuse myself.
For the record, Director recuse himself. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Chair chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next agenda item, F, would be Colorado City Marshal's Office petition. Mr. Brackett, over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mark Brackett on behalf of the Attorney General's Office. I have the next four agendized items, therefore I'm just going to present from the podium. The first one is a petition by the Colorado City Marshal's Office. The applicant is Melissa Villarreal. During the hiring process, Ms. Villarreal disclosed that while she was a juvenile in high school, that she consumed dangerous or narcotic drugs a total of 6 times. It included a 1-time use of cocaine and a 5-time use of ecstasy. During this period of time, she was 15 to 17 years old. This is disqualifying conduct under your rules. A minimum qualification includes not consuming a narcotic or dangerous drug more than 5 times. This is enumerated in Rule 105B. The board's analysis should proceed under Rule 105D. The elements of juvenile indiscretion are listed in your board communication. I believe that the chief from the Colorado City Marshal's Office is present remotely to present his agency's petition. Any questions of me?
And no questions. Thank you, Mr. Brackett. We'll move over. Chief, good morning.
Good morning.
The floor is yours, or in this case, the virtual floor is yours.
Okay. I thank you for this opportunity. I actually have Officer Villarreal behind me as well. And through this process and through the hiring process, I feel like she has been very honest, and that was proven also through the entire process with the polygraph examination in the background. I believe that she made these choices as a juvenile in these indiscretions. I think she has worked very hard to overcome them, and she is on the right path. We've had her through the FTO program. She is becoming a really great officer for us, and we are asking for this petition to give her an opportunity to include her policing in the state of Arizona. She's a tremendous asset to us. She'll be a tremendous asset to any agency that she works for. And I think that she is going to be a great officer. So I'm asking the board to consider the petition that we entered.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you, Ms. Villarreal. Comments, questions?
We have a couple questions.
Director.
Is she Utah Post certified already, or is she AZ Post certified?
She is Utah Post certified, and we have this petition in front of the board for her AZ certification.
So I'll just, being the agency that did most of the investigations on Colorado City police officers and whatnot, and I will compliment Chief Radley. He is been progressive and made great efforts and strides to bring the department and its employees into compliance. The challenge that I have with it, we did not get cooperation from Utah Post during many of our investigations. These were some of the most staggering personnel investigations I've seen, and in almost what I would consider organized fashion. It was as bad as organizationally as anything I've seen in 33 years in law enforcement. I have concerns about the fact that we have a cross-certified city in the state of Arizona, and that in such the waivers and standards, they become post certified in Utah. I don't think after what I've experienced with Utah Post, the process is as strident or stringent as is AZ Post. And then they come to Arizona, and then they get certified in Arizona. Now they've got this dual certification, and for most people, they don't realize they go back and forth between the two jurisdictions up there, Colorado City and Utah, Hilldale. It's my only concern. is that this is as unique a situation as possible, because if we're voting on this, we are voting because this person's already certified. That's why you see her in uniform and patrolling. She's a certified officer in half of their department, but not on the other half of their department. Correct?
Correct.
Okay, so that's my concern. That's my chief concern with it.
And Mr. Chairman, Colonel Silver, if I could, young officer actually fell under your old rule, where we actually evaluate the curriculum of the Utah Post Academy to ours. There were some clear areas where her training in Utah fell short of what Arizona required. We went back to Marshall Radley, who rectified that. He brought in the requisite general instructors through Arizona Post and provided her all that additional training to make sure that her basic academy training matched up with Arizona's basic academy training.
Okay. I'm just going to go on record. I don't like the fact that they're cross-certified. I think you're either an Arizona police officer, law enforcement officer, or you're not. I don't think you're both. I wouldn't allow a state trooper to be a state trooper in Arizona and then go work in the California Highway Patrol part-time or something to that effect. I highly doubt that you would have somebody from Cochise County work with some, be a New Mexico deputy at the same time there and oversee. I have challenges with it. I have a ton of respect for what Chief Radley's doing, but I don't even like the cross certification issue.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah,
Lisa Wise. So I very much appreciate what the Colonel's saying with regard to cross certification of Hilldale and Colorado City after working on prosecuting various crimes in that area for many years. It is a unique environment, to say the least. We have an officer that is currently she's certified in Utah, not in Arizona. I'm going to throw this out because I think it's the right thing to do for the community, and you all can vote me down if you see fit. But I'm going to make a motion based upon the information submitted by the Colorado City Marshal's Office and pursuant to Rule 13.4105D, I move that the board grant the request for waiver on applicant Melissa Villarreal.
Thank you, Ms. Weiss. Do I hear a second?
Chief Oscar, second.
Thank you, Chief. Back to discussion. And I'll echo what the Colonel's saying. I was part of the Post investigation, went up with DPS investigators on this, and we had a heck of a time with Utah Post. They would not work with us, which makes it really a challenge. But I'm also consistent in the fact is what's best for our Arizona community and what Ms. Weiss is saying. So on that. Further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, signify by saying nay.
Nay.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much.
Next item, it would be item G, Pima County Sheriff's Department petition for applicant Alfred Aragon. Hope I said that right. Mr. Brackle, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a petition by the Pima County Sheriff's Department. The applicant is Mr. Aragon. During the hiring process, the applicant disclosed that as an adult, he has masturbated in his car and while in public places, and that he has most recently masturbated in public in his car in 2021. The most recent episode occurred about 1 week before he submitted to his hiring polygraph with the Pima County Sheriff's Department. The applicant disclosed that as an adult, he has masturbated in his vehicle in a public place no more than 30 times. It is unclear from the petition whether the locations of these episodes was secluded enough not to be seen by passersby. The board's analysis should proceed under Rule 103G. The board should consider if the best interests of the law enforcement profession are served and the public welfare and safety are not jeopardized. In sum, the legislature has authorized the board to exclude unsuitable applicants. And the question before the board is, in spite of his conduct, is he suitable under your board rules or not to proceed towards a license? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Brachtel. Comments, questions for Mr. Brachtel? Now we'll follow back up with you. Chief, is Chief? Good morning, Chief. Come on up, introduce yourself, and the floor is yours.
Thank you. I'm Gerard Moretz. I'm the Bureau Chief in charge of investigations at the Pima County Sheriff's Department. I really appreciate the opportunity to come before the board and talk about these issues. And I realize that what the board has before it is a piece of paper with claims that we make about the suitability of our applicants. In preparation for coming before the board today, I met with each, we have three today, I met with each one of our recruits. They're about halfway through the academy. And I reviewed the work that was done by our background investigators. And of course, anything that comes up that's concerning or any kind of a red flag, we try to take as deep a dive as possible into what's been disclosed and really in an effort to understand exactly what occurred and importantly to put into context and with an understanding of life circumstances, try to come away with an understanding of what happened and then measure that against what is in our best interest as an agency and with the chief concern of making sure that we're hiring the best people possible to represent us and to serve our community in an upright fashion. In this particular case, Mr. Aragon describes being in life circumstances in his earlier years, in particular, where due to family members and roommates, there was not a lot of privacy available to him, and he would at times find a place in his car. It was clear in my conversation with Mr. Aragon that these were places where he felt reasonably sure that no one could observe him, and he secured a private setting to interact with girlfriends on his phone and so forth. And this raised a lively discussion in our executive suite about the nature of modern dating and how sometimes technology is a part of that and so forth. And we also had a discussion I had to draw on some years of experience as a sex crimes investigator, where we talked about naturally a number of paraphilias or sexual interests that differ from the norm. And the reality is, in this case, Mr. Aragon had no intention of being discovered. He had no intention of displaying himself or behaving in a way that was exhibitionist in nature. So we're comfortable that we're not dealing with a person who's indulging in a paraphilia. We are dealing with somebody who, due to circumstances in his life, found himself needing to get away from a crowded household to have some private time. And yes, he did. He admitted to engaging in conversations over the phone and so forth with girlfriends and engaging in masturbation not more than 30 times. Now, 30 times sounds like a large number, but if you're familiar with how polygraphs proceed and so forth, many times the polygraph expert will create parameters for the applicant to acknowledge or not acknowledge. And in this case, Mr. Aragon believes that it was much less than 30 times. And this includes, I spoke with Mr. Aragon about the more recent time, and he said with similar concerns, limitations on privacy and so forth, he engaged in this behavior in his vehicle again. But for all intents and purposes, his vehicle was the private place. And again, he proceeded into parking situations that he described as secluded, where he had no fear of being discovered and had no intention or desire to be discovered. This was as private a place as he could find. He is, as you can imagine, embarrassed about this behavior. Most people who have interesting lives and interesting processes of discovery of their sexuality and so forth, don't have to talk about it later on when they're applying for a job. In this case, he did, and he did so honestly. He's embarrassed to have to deal with these facts, but he did do so. And it's our belief that we're not dealing with somebody who's deviant or has a proclivity to engage in a way that will be, embarrass our department or be a problem for the community. And I appreciate your consideration of the context and the circumstances that were involved.
Thank you, Chief. Appreciate it. Any comments, questions for the Chief? It's Chief, right? I'll make sure. Chief. Thanks. Comments, questions? Okay. Thank you, Chief. Mr. Brackett, do we need anything from you?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, the board. If I may,
yes.
Have a comment. Chief, I appreciate your testimony and your presence here today and the advocacy of your applicant. You know, to be forthright, I'll be a nay on anything that comes to the board with regards to a vote. And I base that specifically on the fact of the frequency of this behavior of this individual and the most recent event being 1 week prior to polygraph. And having heard your testimony to the board, I believe that the applicant's comments were a little bit inconsistent, where he expresses, 1 week before my polygraph, I'm on the phone with my girlfriend and I got caught up in the moment, is the quote from the sheriff or the chief deputy, if you will, to the director of post with regards to this petition. That said, having served as a police officer and a correctional officer, we are trained to not get caught up in the moment. And I think that we have to make decisions and have restraint. And I don't think this candidate showed the restraint that I would expect or desire in a police officer in my community.
Thank you, Director. Further discussion? I would entertain a motion.
Jamie Kelly, I move that the board deny the petition by the Pima County Sheriff's Department on applicant Alfred Argon.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Do I hear a second?
I second the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Discussion. Mr. Bracken, do you want to say something?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Chief, did you want to say something? During discussion, I'll open. That's rare, but if you want to say, you went up to say something. Okay, I just want to make sure. Members, anything else during discussion?
I would like to explain. For me, he was in process with the department when this happened. There's a time, I don't know what the time is between application to polygraph, but he was in process. So that's where my struggle was. I believe if he has more time, he can show restraint. I would be willing to reconsider down the road, just not right now.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Any other comments?
Chief.
Chair.
One of my concerns I have with this is if he, with the flag of restraint, even just prior to going for the polygraph, once he gets hired on duty in a uniform in a patrol car, will he, again, not have restraint and pleasure himself while on duty in the patrol car? I have concerns about that.
Thank you, Chief. Further comments? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, say aye, saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next case, item H, Pima County Sheriff's Department petition for applicant Robert Medina. Mr. Brackett, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is also a petition by the Pima County Sheriff's Department. The applicant is Mr. Robert Medina. During the hiring process, Mr. Medina disclosed that he violated work-related policies while he was employed as a corrections officer too with the Arizona Department of Corrections, Rehabilitation, and Recovery. Specifically, during the period 2019 to 2021, Mr. Medina worked as a corrections officer too. The Pima County Sheriff's Department, in its petition, lists what are the work-related violations of policy, and to summarize, the violations included falsification of daily round logs less than 20 times per the petition, not adhering to policies about prisoner tattoo contraband, and sleeping on duty. Once again, the board's analysis should proceed under Rule 103G. The board should consider if the best interests of the law enforcement profession are served and whether the public welfare and safety are not jeopardized. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Brackett. Chief, did you want to comment on this one? Yes. Floor is yours.
Once again, thank you for your consideration and the opportunity to talk about Mr. Medina. Mr. Medina is 25 years old, and I had an opportunity to speak with him myself about these disclosures that he made in the background process. What he explained was he works at the Wilmot Prison, which is a busy and frequently understaffed facility. And oftentimes, due to the work pace and the workload, he described having to essentially improvise in handling rounds and also handling other duties that were required of him. He found himself running around very busily to try to get things done. The other thing that's important to note is that when he found himself essentially overtaxed in that environment and knew that he was unable to do rounds as prescribed every single time, he sought the assistance of supervisors and explained the circumstances, wanting to do the best he could, and was often given advice by supervisors, said, do the best you can, we understand it's busy. The other thing that he explained was the log keeping that he was accustomed to in the prison setting was a paper log. And he said, you know, sometimes I would have a moment to pause and I'd have to look at that log and try to recall and figure out how I had done my rounds and what I had done among doing other things and performing other duties. And I would put down times and so forth that I'm just not sure were right. And so I think that those were, you know, false records that I made. So my impression in having discussion with him was that he's an earnest 25-year-old kid who's very black and white. And so under circumstances, when listening to the description of the workday, sounded to me like having to improvise and do the best that he could to adapt to a very busy situation. He did what he could, and the log record-keeping system sounds informal to begin with. But he threw himself under the bus by saying he had falsified these records, but in again, getting his description of what was actually happening, he was doing the best that he could, keeping his supervisors informed, and also looking for cues from colleagues who were used to this kind of work pace in the prison setting. And he did things that were not unusual with respect to record keeping. Things that he'd seen his colleagues do as well. I also spoke to him about the few incidents that he described where he'd fallen asleep, and he told me that, again, due to staffing shortages, there were times where officers would volunteer to work overtime shifts, and oftentimes those details involved guarding prisoners who were undergoing a medical procedure or who were in a sick bay kind of situation. And he said that those details often involve working with a partner. And under those circumstances where the days got long and fatigue set in, they would watch out for each other, and occasionally they'd take a rest. This was not pulling a blanket around his neck and conking out for long periods of time. This was taking a short rest during the course of an overtime shift where fatigue had set in, with an additional officer to keep an eye on things. He recognized that that wasn't ideal, and he regrets that has occurred. But in this case, Mr. Medina, I was struck by the fact that he takes extreme ownership of his behaviors. He works very hard. He told me that he knows if it doesn't work out at our agency, he's hopeful that it does, but he knows that he would be welcome back into that prison environment where he was working, and in fact his supervisors who were interviewed for the background provided good reviews for him and would gladly take him back. So we're not talking about a bad person or a bad employee. We're talking about a young man who has worked in a tough environment where staffing was short, and he's volunteered. He's given into fatigue a few times. He's done the best that he could do with record keeping on rounds and so forth, which by all descriptions is an imperfect system to begin with. So in my mind, this is an extremely committed young man who, again, takes extreme ownership for his actions, does think a little bit black and white when it comes to the rules, which is okay, but there is context here that I would ask the board to give good consideration to. We believe that he's a suitable candidate, and there's nothing that he disclosed to us that give us reservations about his ability to perform for us.
Thank you, Chief. Any questions, comments for the Chief?
I do have some questions.
Ms. White.
Thank you. Were any of these found to be issues that he was disciplined for?
I don't believe so. That's not in my documentation. It does sound like his disclosure was a proactive disclosure about the work environment, his work habits, and obviously under the scrutiny of background investigations where you're asked many questions about things that happen at work, he gave honest disclosures, but there's not a disciplinary record, and again, his supervisors from the prison give him high remarks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kell. Any other comments, questions?
I've got a question. I may need to ask legal counsel or the director, but I think we have an expert who sits on our board, and I don't know if we can defer to the expert who sits on our board from the Department of Corrections to understand whether this behavior is commonplace or anomalous or something that would be considered highly egregious under their system, so we have a pretty good idea of what we're dealing with. Is that okay to do?
Colonel, I agree with you, but I would defer to Mark on the actual legality.
Thank you, Colonel. Mark Brechtel speaking. In fact, the training and expertise that all of you bring to this board is why you're here. And to that point, absolutely, you can tap into Mr. Perfuri with all of that.
Deputy Director?
So with that, I would be glad to offer my experiences, not only as a correctional officer, a Department of Corrections employee and executive leader for the past 34 years, and my time as a police officer for the past 25 years, which I still remain certified today. To the point of short staffing in prisons, we are short staffed. I anticipate, Chief, again, maybe you drew the short straw for your testimony today. The letters come from the sheriff and the chief deputy from your department. That said, I appreciate that you might be short staffed as well. And you may have some calls holding in dispatch, but you're not going to respond. You're not going to not respond to those calls. At some point, dispatch is prioritizing those calls, and you are going to respond to those calls, and you're going to take a report. You're going to have that citizen contact, whatever the call type may be. Similarly with corrections, short staffing is no excuse for not getting the job done. It may delay the job, but it will get done or should get done, and we're obligated to get the job done. These are wards of the state, if you will, the prisoners that come to prison. We have to look after them. We have to do our security checks and make sure that their health and welfare and that there's not a substantial issue causing harm to that individual, whether it be from themselves or from other prisoners. So not doing rounds because of short staff is unacceptable. And to further that unacceptability by, if you will, tampering with a public record, which is a class 6 felony in Arizona, by falsifying a document is wholly unacceptable, and we have prosecuted staff for that behavior. So there's nothing that mitigates that to falsify the record, if you will. If a check didn't get done, there's opportunity for that particular officer to write a report or to note in his journal, which is a formal process versus an informal process, that in fact the check was unable to get done and why. And that would be on the record and acceptable if there was an inability to make his rounds because of staffing, he needed to be somewhere else. We understand that, but falsifying the record is not acceptable. Additionally, to sleep on duty, again, we have an obligation to look after these individuals. I don't anticipate that it would be acceptable for a detention officer in the Pima County Jail to sleep on duty, nor would it be acceptable for them to conspire with another detention officer to, hey, you watch out for me while I take a nod, and then I'll watch out for you while you take a nod. So wholly against policy, a complete breach of security when an officer is the eyes and ears and, in essence, the last bastion of safety for the public and the community for that particular setting. To miss an opportunity to see something happen real time and to have to react to it because you're waking up could jeopardize the institution and public safety significantly. So sleeping on duty is frowned upon. And then lastly, with regards to overlooking contraband and you know, a lack of order with regards to tattooing in the facility. Order in the facility is a thing. It's important, and we are endeavoring through the rehabilitation process to cognitively change these individuals to do better and make better choices. So to acknowledge and accept a bad choice by giving a prison tattoo and overlooking that is not sending the right message, nor is it consistent with our policies. So to that point, I'll be a no for certification when this comes before the board.
May I respond?
Sure, Chief.
With respect to your experiences, I completely understand. My belief in looking into this matter and in talking with this recruit is that he was in a tough set of circumstances as a fairly new employee, and he was placed in those circumstances by supervisors and managers that understood the limitations of staffing and the challenges that he was going to experience, predictably going to experience in that setting. In speaking with him, in these items that are described as falsification, again, that's a very black and white way of looking at it. Discussing the matter with him, there were times where he indicated approximations on paperwork and so forth, and I've written thousands of case reports as a police officer, and I've approximated times many, many times, and I don't view that as a falsification. I do think that there is it's important to give consideration to the overall situation and context. You have a young employee who does understand the rules, who was very forthright in disclosing what he understands to be violations of policy. However, it's not so simple to think that we can just proclaim that we have to handle these duties and these obligations perfectly when we don't have the manpower, we don't have the coverage that's necessary to do the job perfectly. Sometimes we do the very best that we can, and under these circumstances with our recruit, I believe that he did do the best that he can. He recognized his shortcomings. I believe that he didn't purposely engage in behavior that put others in jeopardy. And I think that he operated in that environment to try to maximize positive outcomes for everybody, including dealing with prisoners and managing prisoners in an environment where he didn't have a lot of backup. So negotiating those rule violations and so forth with prisoners. We have very experienced corrections officers in our facility, and their interpersonal communication skills and their ability to negotiate small items is extraordinary, and what they do really well is they keep the peace in very tough situations with antagonizers. And I see those qualities in Mr. Medina in this case, and I think that the context of the overall institutional challenges, which are much bigger than a 25-year-old kid, need to be taken into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Further comments, questions?
One more question. These cases are coming about because somebody from AZ Post caught them when they did the background review. Is that correct?
That is correct, Colonel.
Okay. Does that person in the room who caught them?
I don't know. I'm sure they are. I'm not sure off the top of my head on this case specifically which person caught this one.
In other words, whoever the person was, they went in, they were reviewing background files, and they found these things jumped out at them.
That is correct, as abnormalities, okay. Concerns regarding our rules.
Okay.
Further comments? I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Robbins, I move that the board deny the petition by the Pima County Sheriff's Department on applicant Robert Medina.
Thank you, Professor. Do I hear a second?
Chief Oscar, second.
Thank you, Chief.
Jerry Williams, second.
Thank you, Chief. That's all right. Any further discussion? There are none. All in favor of the motion, saying aye.
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 All opposed, saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next case, agenda item number I, Pima County Sheriff's Department petition for applicant Brandon Warren. Mr. Brackett, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. During the hiring process, this applicant disclosed that he was dishonest to the Marine Corps in 2018 in order to receive an early separation from the Marine Corps. the Pima County Sheriff's Department described in its petition that Mr. Warren became dissatisfied while he was in the Marine Corps because he did not want to wait 2 years to start college. To be separated early from the Marines, Mr. Warren was required to complete a Marine Corps form entitled Statement Regarding Pending Administrative Separation. You have been provided a copy of Mr. Warren's written statement from 2018 in your board packet. This issue was discovered by the compliance specialist during the new hire audit, and specifically in the new hire packet was a notation from the PCSD psychologist who asked Mr. Warren if he was ever suicidal, and Mr. Warren stated no because he had lied to the military just to secure an early release. Once again, the board's analysis should proceed under Rule 103G.
Thank you, Mr. Brackett. Questions? Hearing none. Chief, back to you again.
Thank you. Once again, Recruit Warren is an individual that I sat with in an effort to try to understand the context of this situation with his past record in the military and the circumstances of his departure from the military. What I learned was that he was a teenager in the Marine Corps, and proceeding through training, when he learned that his package that was presented by his recruiter regarding his ability to begin college and have the college expenses covered by the military, by the government, based on his military service, was not accurate. He was told of the two-year delay, and he became upset about this, began talking to his chain of command about the circumstances and having regrets and considering what could be done to not continue in his military enlistment. The way Mr. Warren described it to me, officials from the Marine Corps explained to him a course of action that could be taken based on feelings of depression or suicidal ideas. The way he describes it, those ideas were kind of clustered together. And in discussing the matter with the military, in his mind, those things were tied together as an explanation or a requirement to proceed with a discharge proceeding. Mr. Warren, in my discussion, said that he was genuinely distressed by the circumstances. I think we've all probably heard of circumstances where the reality of a military situation for some is not exactly as described by military recruiters. And that was the case with Mr. Warren, and he found himself distraught over the commitment that he made with knowledge, with the promise of the ability to start college and have that college paid for. When he found that to be not the case, I think he viewed that as a breach of what he signed up for, what his agreement was, and it was quite distressing for him. My sense was that he got caught up in this process, and I understand what he documented. Our concern in understanding the situation and context was vetted out, and we understood that the circumstances of his request to depart lived in an environment of distress. I'm not a psychologist, but it met the criteria for his release from the military. More importantly, in our process, he was evaluated by our psychologist and found to be an appropriate, well-equipped, mature person. And again, we're talking about a 23-year-old young man, and we're looking back at a time when he was 19 years old. And so having to have some understanding of the context and some compassion for the circumstances folded into our assessment of this candidate, and I would ask for your consideration today.
Thank you again, Chief. Comments, questions?
We had a couple.
Colonel?
When did he finish boot camp?
My understanding is he finished boot camp and was gearing up for tech school.
what we have before us is his statement to the Marine Corps, correct?
I'm unable to hear.
What we have before us is his statement to the Marine Corps, not to you guys, to your agency. It's the statement to the Marine Corps. And he's very clear in his statement to the Marine Corps that there's no ambiguity. He says, I feel like the Marine Corps wasn't for me. He wrote this to the commanding general. I feel the Marine Corps wasn't for me. It wasn't what I expected. I got very depressed and started having suicidal thoughts being in the Marine Corps. And I think I'm better off in a civilian environment where I can contribute better and be healthier and have a better future for myself. So he was very clear that he was suicidal while he was in the Marine Corps. But I can't tell when exactly this happened in the Marine Corps, but early on.
Chairman, to that point, he tells the psychologist during the background investigator that he wasn't suicidal. So he's either lying to the psychologist or he's lying to the military. Either way, he was untruthful at some point. Presumably, if he was untruthful to the military under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, it would have been grounds for dishonorable discharge. I believe dishonorable discharge is an automatic disqualifier. These are clear presumptions, but I'm just pulling the thread with regards to the candidates that's before us.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I think one of the other factors in that packet was that there was a woman, who gave him that information that if he were to state that he was suicidal or had suicidal thoughts, it would be grounds for discharge. So the genesis of that document is tied to his or her statements giving him advice. I have a problem with him being 23, the starting when he was 19. At what age was he when he was discharged? 20?
I think right around 19.
Okay. So it's only been 4 years. He lied. He clearly lied to get an intended result that he wanted. Serving in law enforcement for a long time on the legal end, The statement I always heard was, you lie, you say goodbye. I understand that he's young. I believe that as a young man, he needs to learn that he can't utilize the system to get the desired result, even if he did make a mistake in joining the Marines. I don't go either way. But you can't utilize a lie for an intended result. So with that being said, similarly to what Ms. Kelly said earlier, I would be glad to see him come back in a couple of years, prove he's learned from his mistake, and have it potentially reconsidered at that point. I just think it's too raw right now. With that being said, I'm going to make a motion.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Based upon the petition submitted by the Pima County Sheriff's Department and pursuant to Rule 13.4.103G, I move the board grant the petition. Nope, sorry, wrong one. I move that the board deny the petition by the Pima County Sheriff's Department on applicant Brandon Moore.
Thank you. Ms. Weiss. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Colonel. Thank you, Professor. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Call the polls. I say nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Before we move on to final actions, I got a question on these cases. I thought we had a discussion before they go to the academy. Don't they have to be pre-approved by post during the background so we don't have these scenarios where they get to the academy, now we're going to pull all. I believe all three are in the academy right now. So, and I feel for the applicants on that statement, but I thought we had discussed that. And correct me if I'm wrong, Director.
We did discuss that, Mr. Chairman, and I'll take responsibility for that. I misspoke during a meeting sometime a year and a half ago about that. We have these conversations on the front end, and we teach it in our BI school, the background investigator schools, on if you have a questionable candidate or you have an issue, bring it to us first. Anytime we identify these issues, if we have the opportunity to, I will reach out to the head of the organization prior to them entering the academy, because exactly we want to avoid exactly what you're talking about. But we have no statutory authority to deny someone to start the academy, just based on, because they have to have their due process. And this is what, this is one portion of their due process coming before the board.
So along those lines, did AZ Post have any idea about this before they entered the academy? Were there any discussions had that where there was a warning, hey, these are probably going to be problematic issues? I can't recall a time that we had, we've ever had a situation like this where we had one, two, three, where it was essentially unanimous across the board.
I don't remember the exact timing, but I know we had 17. I think we got 17 files at one time for this upcoming, for an upcoming academy class. So I don't know if we had this discussion before they started or shortly thereafter. It was somewhere right around there. And Michelle, if you can help me on that, the timing, I don't remember exactly.
So Pima County Sheriff's Department, they usually hire about 35 applicants twice a year to go into an academy and June or January, and so when we get the backgrounds, we conduct all the compliance specialists work on the background package, and as we find issues like that came up, then we send it back to the background investigator to do follow-up on, and sometimes they can clear up the issues. So sometimes there's back and forth on issues that come up, and we're able to work it out, and then sometimes, like on this one, they weren't able to clear up the issue to our satisfaction in today's board meeting.
But to your point, Mr. Chairman and Colonel, our goal is always to make sure the AGs are fully aware before someone starts academy to the best of our ability. But you have to keep in mind, sometimes, to Michelle's point, we have those back and forth, but they submit the packet to us very late in the game. So as that back and forth is going on, the academy may or may not start. But again, our mission is always to identify issues before anyone starts academy, because there's nothing worse than having someone, because we had one a couple months ago where someone was three quarters of the way through the academy and ultimately the board denied certification. So we would really like to avoid that. But the rules don't give us the ability to deny someone entrance to the academy until they have their due process rights have been fully exhausted.
And that's where I'm looking at the applicant involved here. I mean, we're setting them up, especially on a controversial issue like this, where, and I appreciate your staff jumping in there, and yeah, I wish there was a better route then. I'll say that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Ms. Wright.
So I read the letter from Chief Castikar, and a lot of anger, a lot of frustration in the letter. Would it not behoove the board, especially in light of the outcome of the decisions today with regard to Pima County, that a letter be sent asking for greater heads up? He's asking for more autonomy in making the decisions, and totally understandable, these are his people. But ASPOS has to do its job as well. So is it possible just to ask him for more heads up prior to those applicants going into the academy so that this doesn't happen again?
Absolutely. 100%. I can draft something for the board's consideration. And just so you know, when we host, and Mike Goros has done it for the last several years, the background investigator schools and most of our compliance specialists teach during those schools, we talk about that. And when I first got here, as you know, the first part of the process is the AG Smith and A1, after they believe their applicant meets the minimum standards. What we've instructed them to do, and we're getting a lot of really good feedback from, is engage the compliance specialist from the agency perspective on the front end of it if you think there's an issue before submitting the A1. Because, again, to Michelle's point, we can mitigate a lot of these things just by asking more questions. Have your background investigator go back and ask this, this, and this, and we should be okay. So we're doing that a lot more on the front end, but I'd be happy to author that letter for your consideration.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other comments on this? All right, moving on. Final action cases. First case, 2019-228. Mr. Duran, I'll turn the floor to you, and good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board.
Pardon me, Mr. Chair, I need to recuse myself. It's Chief William. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I had two people talking. Sandy, go ahead. Okay, for the record. And Chief?
Sorry, I need to recuse myself.
Thank you, Chief. All right, now, Mr. Duran, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. On October 21st, 2020, this board voted to initiate proceedings against the respondent, Marcos Rodriguez, as peace officer certification, and a complaint was issued. For the record, I believe Mr. Rodriguez is in the room. He is not represented by counsel. The complaint charged that Mr. Rodriguez had violated post rules 109A7, A8, and A12, specifically that Mr. Rodriguez was unprofessional in his duties when he used his authority to convert an enforcement contact with Ms. Guzman into a social relationship, and he had committed a felony by recklessly displaying his firearm. The state litigated this matter at the Office of Administrative Hearings over the course of 3 days. The state called 5 witnesses. Mr. Rodriguez testified but called no witnesses. The ALJ issued a decision on March 21st, and I present it to you now for your final action. Ultimately, the judge found allegation 1 proven by a preponderance of the evidence that respondent had committed a violation of rules A8 and 12 by converting a professional encounter into a social relationship and had brought discredit to his department. Now, let us review what we know based on the judge's decision. Mr. Rodriguez was on duty and in uniform on August 26, 2018, driving a marked patrol car. He nearly collided with Ms. Guzman. Ms. Guzman had committed no violations. Mr. Rodriguez then conducted a traffic stop of Ms. Guzman in order to ensure that she did not file a complaint against him. During the traffic stop, Mr. Rodriguez obtained Ms. Guzman's telephone number and later obtained her address. Later that day, while still on duty and in uniform, Mr. Rodriguez went to her apartment. He checked out on his MDC that he was report writing. While inside the apartment, Mr. Rodriguez engaged Ms. Guzman in discussions about sexual preferences and offered to be her sexual partner in the future. We also know that prior to leaving Ms. Guzman's apartment, Mr. Rodriguez withdrew his backup handgun from his outer vest carrier. He admitted this conduct to investigators and during his testimony. Let me reiterate. While he was in Ms. Guzman's home, while on duty, after soliciting sex from her, he withdrew and displayed his backup firearm. Now, according to the ALJ's decision and the evidence, Mr. Rodriguez gave inconsistent testimony about why he did this and how he did this. He first told investigators that when he was leaving the apartment, he requested a hug from Ms. Guzman. When they hugged, she felt a hard object inside of his vest carrier, the bulge being his backup weapon. Mr. Rodriguez claimed initially he took out the gun to show it to her. He then claimed he took it out in order to adjust the outer carrier. In either case, we know that during his interactions with Ms. Guzman, in her apartment, he removed and handled the firearm. Ms. Guzman filed a complaint against Mr. Rodriguez and told SID investigators that not only did he pull the gun out of his vest carrier, that he had pressed it up against her rib cage. She obtained an injunction against harassment against Mr. Rodriguez, which included that allegation. Mr. Rodriguez never challenged that injunction in the municipal court. Based on these allegations, SID detectives coordinated a one-party consent call between Ms. Guzman and Ms. Rodriguez, or what we refer to as a confrontation call, in order to determine whether an assault had in fact occurred. The ALJ decision notes that throughout the confrontation call, Ms. Guzman repeatedly asked Mr. Rodriguez about his gun and why he had pressed it up against her ribs. Throughout the call, not one time did Mr. Rodriguez ever explicitly deny those allegations. Among the members of this board, there is likely close to 300 years of combined law enforcement experience. You know better than anyone that in an investigation when there are no independent witnesses, a confrontation call can provide crucial evidence. Moreover, one would expect a suspect, when confronted with an allegation he did not commit, to vehemently deny it. In cases where a suspect fails to make a denial, that can be considered an admission by silence and can be as damning as a confession. Based on the confrontation call, SID investigators felt they had established probable cause and arrested Mr. Rodriguez for felony assault and disorderly conduct. He was terminated by the Phoenix Police. MCAO, the county attorney's office, however, declined to file charges. Now, I want to point out some critical information that the ALJ failed to include in his decision, but which is in the administrative record and which was introduced in the hearing. The ALJ failed to make any determination about the credibility of Mr. Rodriguez's testimony. This is a critical oversight by the judge. It is his responsibility to assess the credibility of witnesses. The ALJ failed to note that while Mr. Rodriguez was testifying, he made demonstrably false statements, and the state repeatedly impeached him with his own prior inconsistent statements. In fact, he had to be confronted with his past statements before testifying truthfully at all, including denying he conducted a traffic stop, denying he had taken his gun out, denying engaging in sex talk. The ALJ also completely ignored the sworn expert testimony of Mr. Rick Van Curen. Mr. Van Kuren is a former DPS trooper and now a training specialist here at AZ Post. Rick is a master taser instructor, a post firearms instructor since 2005, an instructor for handgun, shotgun, revolver, and rifle. He's a primary fundamental firearms instructor, an NRA pistol and precision rifle instructor, a high threat vehicle engagement instructor, an NTOA active shooter instructor, and a force on force instructor. Rick, the expert witness, reviewed all the evidence in this case and testified in detail that, in his expert opinion, Mr. Rodriguez's handling of his firearm in this incident was in direct violation of Arizona Post training guidelines, basic principles of firearm safety, and was extremely reckless. This compelling expert testimony is never mentioned in the ALJ's decision. However, despite the glaring omission in the ALJ's ruling, he did find sufficient evidence to establish that Mr. Rodriguez had violated Rules A8 and A12, which allow the board to sanction Mr. Rodriguez. The state argues that because these rule violations were so flagrant, they constitute gross malfeasance in office and exactly the type of misconduct that most seriously jeopardizes the public trust in the law enforcement profession. Therefore, based on the rules violations sustained by the ALJ and based upon the proven misconduct, the state urges you to revoke Mr. Rodriguez's peace officer certification.
Thank you, Mr. Duran. Any comments, questions?
Actually, I got one.
Yes, sir.
So he's on duty when he went over there in the first place, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Any other comments, questions? Thank you, Mr. Duran. Mr. Rodriguez is here. Would you like to address the board?
Good morning and welcome. Thank you for the opportunity to come here and talk to all of you. I would like to start saying that I went to three different forums representing myself in this case. I don't think it's coincidence that in those three different forums, the authority find out, based on the evidence presented by the city attorney, now by the AZ Post, that I never committed any crime. I never lied. I was truthful. For some reason, Phoenix PD, besides terminating me, contacted the Arizona National Guard, trying to get me fired from there, trying to get a dishonorable discharge from the National Guard. I have to represent myself in front of the land component commander, the highest rank of the Arizona National Guard, and even him find out that was a false allegation, false accusation from this lady. It's been proved, and it's in here in the law judge letter, that for some reason Mr. Duran didn't read it. The administrative law judge decision must be based on evidence that is substantial, reliable, and probative. Substantial evidence is evidence which will permit a reasonable person to conclude that the process finding should be sustained. Mr. Rodriguez admit that he converted a professional encounter into a social relationship, and his action brings discredit to the department. Consequently, Mr. Rodriguez has violated what he mentioned. Ms. Guzman, which is the lady that accused me, did not appear and testify, and Post did not prove that her statements are reliable. And again, this is find out in three different forums. The first one was Civil Service Board, where the hearing officer couldn't conclude that I actually committed a crime. She even recommended the punishment to be 24-hour suspension, but I ended being terminated. Ms. Guzman is not reliable. She lied to investigators about how Mr. Rodriguez got her address, a lie that she repeated in her complaint against the city. The city hearing officer conducted or concluded that she told three different versions on her story and in her complaint against the city. She asserted that Mr. Rodriguez pointed the gun at her face, an allegation that does not appear anywhere else. The evidence also suggests that Mrs. Guzman made her allegation regarding the weapon to her ribs because she thought it will help her in obtaining citizenship because she was an illegal citizen. Because Ms. Guzman's statement has not been proven to be reliable, these statements cannot be considered substantial evidence. Post has not proven that Mr. Rodriguez violated Arizona Administrative Code Section R13-4-109 Alpha 7 because it has not proven its allegation that Mr. Rodriguez held the weapon to Ms. Guzman's ribs and it has not shown that he recklessly handled or displayed his weapon when he removed it from his vest for a few seconds. Once again, board, three different forum, all evidence was presented. The only violation that I committed, and I'm here, I'm not hiding, I never hide, to say, yeah, I admit it. I fell on the conversion. That's the only violation that I committed. Right now, I'm working full-time with the National Guard. For the one that don't know, this badge means that I went to combat to fight for our freedom. I'm proud to represent the Army and the Arizona National Guard, and that's the reason why I'm here, because I'm not a criminal, and I was treated like a criminal without any proof or evidence. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez. Thank you for your service. Our scope is within our own rules. What Phoenix or National Guard is not our scope, please understand that. Mr. Duran, since there was a solicited thought reference, do you want to respond in any way?
I rest on my argument.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Rodriguez, thank you. Any questions first?
I do.
Okay. Hold on, Mr. Rodriguez. I apologize.
Mr. Rodriguez, when you first went to Ms. Guzman's apartment, did you lie about going there on city time?
Never. I even put it in the computer. I never lied.
So when you went there the first time, what did you say you were doing?
I went there only one time.
Okay. And what did you say you were doing?
Doing to...
There was something in here that I can't find right now.
What did you put out as your disposition while you were there?
Thank you.
I think I put lunchtime and writing a report.
When you were actually at her apartment?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Colonel. Ms. Weiss, anything else?
Not right now. Thank you.
Colonel?
So, when did you graduate the academy?
2016, November 4th.
And when did this incident occur?
August 26, 2018.
Okay, so basically less than 2 years you're out of the academy.
Yes, sir.
And you go to this woman's place on duty.
Yes, sir.
I read somewhere, I thought you actually did write a report while you were there. Is that right?
I was writing a report when I was there.
Okay. But you admit then you were on duty seeking a personal relationship with somebody when you went to her apartment. Would that be accurate?
That is correct, sir.
Okay, and then I can go back and forth. I'm going to ask you, and then I'll ask our attorney. I want to go back to a part of your hearing transcript here. What I read when I read this before is that the complainant in this case lacked truth or veracity on multiple different occasions. She gave different accounts during the course of this story. In your mind, so let me ask you this. I'm just going to ask you directly. Did you ever take out your gun while you were in her apartment, whether you pointed it at her or not? At any time, did you withdraw your gun from the holster to show it to her?
I did not. The only reason why I removed my gun, my secondary gun from my vest, as you have experienced, the vest has a Velcro, and the gun was in the front. So the Velcro's on the side. If you sit, of course, you know, it compressed because there's a bolt in the front. So to be able to like, you know, adjust the vest, I put myself like it was like in a wall. The gun was in the holster, so I put it out. She was on my back. I put the gun. I adjust the Velcro and then put it in. She never saw it, anything like that.
Hold on. If I'm not mistaken, Phoenix PD actually wears a standard police uniform, right? You don't wear tactical or load-bearing vests in uniform, right?
I'm not.
Well, no, I mean, do you wear a button-up shirt? Uniform, like you see that state trooper right there?
But the vest goes outside, sir.
Okay, but you're talking about a vest that looks like a police uniform. It's not a
vest.
It's not a load-bearing vest, right?
No,
it's not a Molly vest or something.
It's a vest that goes inside a cover that looks like a uniform. But
right.
The Velcro is in both sides.
On the sides, I understand. Okay, and where do you store your backup weapon?
It was a zipper in the front. It's like a pocket
right. That
goes inside.
Okay. So you sit down in your patrol car for 10 hours a shift, right?
And the Velcro is open.
Well, why would the Velcro be open on your vest if that's what's there to protect you, to keep the Kevlar in place so if you get shot in the side?
So once again, sir, if, for example, I have the gun here and I'm seeing the gun will make some pressure in my chest. If I don't open the Velcro in this side while I'm driving, it's gonna bother me the whole time. So this side is open.
Okay.
This side is still adjusted. If I go out my patrol car and adjust the
okay.
The
so Velcro. When you step out of your control car,
or I can remove the gun, adjust the Velcro, and then put it back in and get out from my vehicle.
So when you step out of your patrol car every time, you readjust your vest?
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm going to take that as your word. But in that statement, if I'm to take that, then I'm to believe that every time you're in your patrol car, because the manner in which you carry your backup weapon is so uncomfortable, you take out your backup weapon while you're in your patrol car?
If I'm getting out.
Wait.
It has to be like, of course. It's not like I'm gonna go to a P1 call, and I'm just gonna remove it, adjust my Velcro, and get out.
Okay, I believe it or not, I actually worked on the street for a period of time in my career and carried a backup gun. I'm trying to put myself in your position. The only time that backup gun ever came out of my holster was when I went to the jail and I put it in a locker with my primary weapon before I went into the jail, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or in the trunk, whatever the case may be. My question to you is, you're telling me that you constantly, as a practice, took your weapon, your backup weapon, out of your vest, out of its holster.
The weapon is always in the holster. All the time in my vest.
Okay.
It's a small. It's a Glock 43.
Like, familiar with it. I'm just saying. What I'm trying to get at is, why did that gun ever come out in public view? Why did your backup gun ever come out in public view? I'm not saying you pointed it at her. I don't think that's been proven here necessarily. But I'm asking you if that gun came out while you were in her apartment, and why that gun came out while you were in her apartment.
Yeah, I pulled it out, like I said, you know, just to adjust my vest. That was the only reason I pulled it out. And even when I pulled it out, it was still in the holster. Put it in a, I think it was a TV stand, if I'm not mistaken, for a few seconds, adjusted my vest, put it back in, and that's it.
Okay.
And it's hard. I know it's hard.
I struggle with the plausibility of that. But okay.
I understand, and you know when I was in front of the hearing officer, there was picture of the apartment and all that, and of course for her, I believe it made more sense to be able to see the picture of the apartment and actually locate the TV stand and the whole logistic of the apartment. But here it's kind of different, you know, difficult to explain.
Mr. Duran, I have a question. I may.
Yes.
Was there an investigation into the veracity of the entirety of his story as to what transpired? I can't, and I'm asking you two questions, so I apologize for being somewhat convoluted. I feel like I'm actually acting like an attorney in court where they ask you 25 questions and then they expect you to give one answer, so I apologize. But the first part of the question is, was there an investigation into the veracity or lack thereof with regard to the weapon ever having come out? Was that ever part of this? Not that the weapon was pointed, but that the weapon came out.
Yes. The Phoenix Police conducted both a professional standards internal investigation and a criminal investigation.
Mm-hmm.
During both interviews, the respondent admitted to withdrawing his gun. His reason for doing so varied, but in both interviews, he admitted that his gun was taken out.
Okay, got that. My next question is, am I correct in everything that I read here that the witness in this case against Mr. Rodriguez lacked veracity and consistency in any story she told?
Well, that's a more difficult question to answer. I will say that the criminal investigators thought that she was sufficiently truthful and honest that they asked the county attorney to file felony charges. The difference, and I would point out that victims of trauma don't necessarily always remember every detail right away, don't always have perfect memories. There's really rarely such thing as a perfect victim. However, they thought she was sufficiently truthful in order, as long, and again, the basis of that finding was her statements when compared with the lengthy confrontation call, where basically the respondent agreed with everything she was saying, and when she specifically asked him about the criminal allegations and talked about the guns, the respondent never denied it. In fact, he, again, something that is mentioned in the judge's decision, he tried to explain to investigators that he was confused that when Ms. Guzman was talking about his gun over and over again, he thought she was perhaps talking about his penis.
Yeah, I saw that with the phallic nature of metaphor in there, but the other question I have is, did the witness in this case, and I just, the number of the federal order doesn't come to mind, where a person is illegally in this country and they say they're a victim of a crime and therefore they get a waiver for citizenship. I know it because I used to get them sent to me and I'd have to sign them.
It's called the U visa.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you very much. The U visa. Just curious, did she ever apply for a U visa during this and use this as her case?
First of all, I cannot speak to that. All I can tell you is there was never any evidence whatsoever produced for this judge to even make that finding, which I thought was horrendous, to be quite honest. Because the only evidence in the administrative record that has anything to do with her immigration status is a Phoenix Police Department report where Ms. Guzman is listed as a victim of a domestic violence assault by her estranged husband. I believe they're still married. But Phoenix Police responded, take a report that she was the victim of an assault. And again, this is in the record. I believe it was the respondent who was part of his presentation. They interview the victim. She claims she's afraid. She gets instructions about how to get an order of protection, etc. when detectives finally reach out to do a follow-up with the suspect, her husband, he claims, oh, she's just calling you because she wants to try to get citizenship. That is the only allegation. So for the judge to make that broad of a finding based on what the suspect told the police during a DV investigation of him, I mean, you can draw your own conclusions on that. But that was there was no evidence from the federal government, Department of Homeland Security, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, nothing to substantiate that, which I think is why the judge's statement is there is so grossly inappropriate.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, Colonel, if I could follow up also. When you were talking about the veracity of the victim's statement, the victim in this case, or excuse me, I'll just refer to it as Ms. Guzman, did eventually file a lawsuit against the city of Phoenix, and which was settled. The lawsuit was filed after the administrative and criminal investigations were complete. And so the investigation of the misconduct, both internally and criminally, had absolutely nothing to do with this lawsuit that was later filed and settled, and I thought it was irrelevant to the hearing, Frank.
Okay.
Thank you. Anything else?
No.
Thank you, Carl. Ms. White.
So just so I understand from legal counsel, there are two motions that need to be made. The first motion needs to be either to accept or modify the findings of fact, conclusions of law, correct?
That is correct.
And then the second one would be based on whether we accept or modify that we either revoke or suspend peace officer certification or take no action, leaving further to agency discretion.
Correct. The second motion is regarding any disciplinary action that the board would vote to take.
Okay. So if the board felt so inclined, we would need to be specific with regard to what paragraph needs to be modified with what facts?
That is correct. To change a finding of fact, you would need to reference something in the record. To change a conclusion of law, you don't need to reference to the record. You would just need to make a statement of why you feel that conclusion of law is incorrect.
Because to change a finding of fact, for us, we don't have the entire record. We have the presentation that was made today, and we have the documents that were presented in our packet, but we don't have the actual testimony, and that's, I don't really think that any of us would go through that whole thing to look at something that detailed. I mean, we sit as a board. So if we felt so inclined, we could change the conclusions of law based on the facts presented and the presentation, correct?
Correct. You could change any of the conclusions of law. You could accept them all. You could reject them all. You could modify them.
Can I add, Ms. Weiss, to what you're saying? Because I feel like you're getting almost lost in this case a bit in the fact that we're going down this road of whether he did or didn't point a gun. And this is just my view. From this document, I can't discern that he did or he didn't. I don't think that that's my view. Yet, what I struggle with is in 2 years or less than 2 years, utilizing the job to facilitate a personal relationship, going to somebody's house and being there to engage in that relationship. And then I think the issue with the whole thing with the backup gun ever coming out in any capacity, shape, or form is problematic in the manner in which it's articulated. But I feel like we're going down this road about something that we don't really have sure footing. But yet what's being lost is, I hate to say this, it's like a police recruit. You know, truthfully, if they do something really bad in the academy, that's when they're going to be their very best. They're under the most supervision ever. It's like a first date, right? Ain't going to get any better than that. It's the best person's on their best behavior. This is in less than 2 years. And utilizing the job to facilitate a personal relationship and going to the place or whatever. You know, I've heard of cops trying to get a phone number, this and that, and that's problematic in and of itself. But then this, and then the gun comes out, which I don't understand.
Can I ask something, if it's possible?
So, I don't know what our latitude is on this, because I don't think those issues should be lost, is what I'm getting at.
Ms. White.
So what I would propose, because I'm not comfortable changing the findings of facts, because I don't have enough facts, and to tweak the conclusions of law from the ALJ, again, although from what we're being presented, maybe they weren't exactly postured in the facts that were provided. I don't know. But I think that if we accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law from the ALJ, and then we allow for agency discretion in the future, Mr. Rodriguez will have to explain himself to another agency. He's already been discharged from Phoenix. He's going to have to answer the questions all over again as to what happened and why it happened, and that's on him. Otherwise, the only thing that we could do then is revoke or suspend if we don't leave it to agency discretion. If we don't want to, and back again, unless we want to rewrite the findings of fact and or conclusions of law.
I will state this, and my experience on this board, and we never get everything. That's what you're going at, Colonel. But we have a due process within POST, and that is ALJ looking at these, bringing it back with a more depth investigation with a summary. That's what we rely on in many cases. We do have discretion to divert from this, but I think once we start doing that, we better be very careful, and that's where I'm at. I think we need to take the facts at hand, what we have in front of us, and we make, a reasonable and conscious decision from there. So before we do any more discussion, Mr. Rodriguez, you have one last thing you want to say? Please keep it short.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to bring the fact that report that Mr. Duran mentioned, that she accused the husband, this happened in end of May. My situation happened in August. So she had a plan. She had an agenda, and I believe that the reason why the judge got to that conclusion. Also, Phoenix PD find out that she lied to them in their statement, September 10. The incident happened August 26. So we're talking about 10 days, maybe 14 days. They find out she lied. So if I'm not mistaken, that's a crime, lying to a law enforcement. I understand she's in the side of the victim, but I never run her play. She mentioned that the reason why I didn't fight the injunction against harassment, that was the direction of the union attorney. I did wanted to fight it because she was lying, of course, but you know, I'm not gonna go against an attorney because I'm not an attorney.
Again, we don't want to run down these rabbit holes. That's not part of what we're looking at today. We appreciate your input. Anything else from the board members, Mr. Rodriguez? Sir, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Ms. Weiss.
I move to accept the administrative.
I'm sorry,
Mr.
Ray. May I just respond briefly?
Sure.
I just want to make sure the record is correct. The Phoenix police never made the determination that Ms. Guzman lied. Second, I would just like also to remind the board that despite some of the omissions I thought was important to point out, the judge did find that the respondent violated Rule A8 and A12, which is malfeasance and conduct which tends to bring jeopardize the public trust in the profession, which authorizes the board to impose the discipline that it needs to.
Thank you, Mr. Duran, for that clarification. Ms. White, back to you.
For the first motion, I move to accept the administrative law judge's findings of fact and conclusions of law.
Jamie Kelly, second.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. For the second part of that motion, or I entertain a motion for the second part.
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Robinson. I move to revoke peace officer certification in this matter.
Thank you, Professor. Do I hear a second?
Chief Oscar, second.
Thank you, Chief. Further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, signify by saying nay.
Nay.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next case. Thank you, Ms. Rodriguez. Good luck to you. Next case, 2018-135, Mr. Yeoman. Mr. Duran, you're going to do this. I'm going to make a statement on this one here.
Yes,
this is Okay. Record noted. This is the date and time set for consideration of the motion for review in case number 2018-135 regarding the peace officer certification of Herlin Yeoman. Did I say that right? Are the parties present? Okay. Just one part. Please come forward and identify yourself for the record. Come up here to the front, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Edmundo Rubin on behalf of Herlin Yeoman.
Thank you, sir. The board has received and reviewed the motion and response in this case. Does the party who filed the motion wish to make a brief statement this time?
That would be the same.
Yeah, Mr. Dren.
Yes, just very briefly. So this is more or less a procedural motion based on irregularities in the board's previous deliberations in this case. And I'm not going to repeat what's written in the motion, but essentially it articulates that in the previous, when the board first reviewed this, it voted to take no action with AG discretion, but did not vote on the actual administrative law judge's findings, like you just did in the previous case. So essentially, I'm just asking the board to correct procedural errors that occurred previously. And again, I will mention that the state believes that there is sufficient evidence in the record to support accepting the judge's findings and imposing discipline. However, that discretion is entirely within the board's jurisdiction.
This was a void from the previous, when we initiated, we failed to do this, address this?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So we're making a we're correcting a past error. Monique?
Is Mr. Rubina going to address his response to the motion?
Yeah, I was just clarifying.
We're okay, because I can provide legal advice.
Okay. All right. Does the other party want to follow a motion, sir? The floor is yours, if you wish.
Members of the board, really, I don't know if you remember the facts of this case. Do you remember them? Okay, you don't need any factual. This was one where the board was struggling to kind of figure out how do we take action on this. We don't agree with the decision making. It was a sort of a uncharacteristically muddled opinion in this case. And there are two things that I would mention. One is that the post is looking at this and basing their request for this review on 41 ARS 41109208, which does not apply to the post board under the statute. That statute says this section does not apply to the post board. That's one. But the second issue is one of materiality. The board made a decision that it disagreed with the judge's determination in this case, and there's a question whether the manner in which it did so was really material. Does it matter? Is it important? And I would argue that it's not. You know, this was the case in which the judge in one part of the case said, you know, he didn't solicit these things. Remember, he didn't solicit, and then in a conclusion of law found that he did solicit. And so it didn't jive. And the board basically voted to take no further action. Essentially, the board voted, I believe, that it did not agree with the conclusions of law. And I would find that, or I would ask that if that's the case, that you simply state that on the record. And I think this case can be over, I believe. But ask the board's attorney to comment. Thank you.
Appreciate it, sir. Monique?
Monique Cody, independent advisor for the board. Mr. Robina is correct in that POST is the only agency that does not have to officially accept or reject findings of fact, conclusions of law of the ALJ. So that 41109208I does not apply. However, I went back and looked at this after our last meeting. There is another section of the Administrative Proceeding Act that does apply to the board, and that is the one right before it. It's ARIS 41-1092-07F6. 7 is that the a final administrative decision shall include findings of fact and conclusions of law. So here, procedurally, you could go back and do you could review your decision and do a new motion. If it's not under 41-1092-08I, so you've read the state's motion, you've read the response, you've heard from both attorneys. So I guess your first point of order would be to approve or deny the state's motion for review. And then after you do that, then you can determine whether you want to take any other actions regarding this case.
Thank you, Monique. Mr. Duran, you want to state something?
Can I ask a question? Is the bottom line, we just need to make a statement, make a motion to reject the hearing officer's decision because our finding was contrary to the facts that the hearing officer came back with?
You're not under any obligation to change your decision at this point unless you accept the state's motion for review. Then you'd be under some obligation. If you deny the state's motion for review, you're under no obligation to change your order. You would have an option to change it on your own due to the other statute that says your decision shall have findings of fact, conclusions of law.
But
that would be the only difference.
We had a procedural omission. We've already made a decision on the case. Mm-hmm. We're just correcting that omission at this time. So I don't want to get too far away. It makes it too muddy is what I'm trying not to do.
Exactly. So that's why the first point of order would be to – you have a motion on the floor. You've heard from both attorneys, so you can take a motion on the motion. You can move to accept or reject the motion for review.
All right. Thank you. Let me read this last thing, and then we'll move for the motion. We now deliberate on the motion for review. If the motion is granted, the maker of the motion must specify the grounds on which the review is based. I will entertain a motion at this time. You're all thoroughly confused.
Well, I'd like to make the motion because I already know what we decided last time. Yes. And to stay consistent, I just don't even know how to articulate the motion.
Wendy, can we help with that?
Sure. So your first motion would be straightforward. The motion to grant the state's motion for review or to deny the state's motion to review. Those are your two choices right now.
I knew these concussions that I had before in my life would catch up to me. I didn't realize it would be at this stage. I've got an instructional copy right here, and I'm not even sure I'm going to be able to muddle through this.
It's already called old age.
So if we're moving to deny the motion for review, then it will stay that what our original decision was will stand, correct? Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, very good. I'm locking in. Good to go here. Okay, I move to deny the motion for review because it fails to meet the board's requirement for review.
I have a motion. Do I hear a second?
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Robbins, I second that motion.
Thank you, Professor. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, you're going to say an aye.
Aye.
All opposed, you're going to say nay. Thanks, Jerry. You had an aye, Jerry?
Chair
votes aye. Motion carries.
I'm sorry, I have to interrupt. Was there an issue with the vote before? Did you want to clarify something before?
No. So the motion has now been denied. The motion is made. The motion is seconded, and a vote is taken. So the motion is dead. The board, at its discretion, could on its own initiative revisit the yeoman's decision and order, and if you would like to adopt the ALJ findings of fact, reject the conclusions of law, and issue a revised order, you have your own authority to do that if you would like to, or you could just let it rest. So those are your two options before you right now, since this matter is on the agenda.
Thank you.
Discussion?
You don't have to make another motion, do
we? We have to.
You don't have to make a motion. You only need to make a motion if you want to, on your own initiative, revisit that decision and revise it in some manner. But if not, you don't need a motion to not revisit it.
Somebody speaks up, we're going to move on. All right.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, before you start your next topic, Chief Williams, I believe it's time where you have to depart. Is that correct?
So thank you, Mr. Director. Yes, Mr. Chairman, I need to depart. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Be safe. Thank you. Thank you, Director. Next final action case, 2021-186. Mr. Duran, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Arizona Post staff and the respondent, Mr. Derek Hughes, offer the attached consent agreement for your review and approval. Mr. Hughes is not represented by counsel and is not present to my knowledge. Mr. Hughes was employed by the Phoenix Police Department from June 18, 2018 to August 3, 2021. In 2021, he applied as a lateral officer in Gilbert Police Department. During the background investigation there, he revealed that he had violated the terms of his TOC certificate and accessed the CJIS for personal use. He was disqualified from the Gilbert PE hiring process, and they informed Phoenix Police of the disclosure. When confronted by Phoenix PSP, investigators, Mr. Hughes immediately resigned, and PSP was unable to complete investigation of the allegation. During discussions with the AD Post staff hour, Mr. Hughes claimed to have used his CJIS system to run his neighbor's license plate while on duty in his patrol vehicle, and he said he did this in order to learn his neighbor's name. The parties to the consent agreement agreed that Mr. Hughes' actions are in violation of post rules and proposed that the board suspend Mr. Hughes' peace officer certification for a period of 12 months, beginning retroactively on August 3rd, 2021 to August 3rd, 2022. This is in the range of personal discipline, and I'm happy to answer any factual questions.
Thank you, Mr. Duran. Any questions, comments? If not, I entertain a motion.
Jamie Kelly, I move to accept the proposed consent agreement for a 12-month suspension of peace officer certification beginning August 3rd, 2021 and ending August 3rd, 2022.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Thank you, Colonel. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, so you're going to say an aye?
Aye.
All opposed, say aye. Nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next case, 2020-158. Mr. Durant.
Thank you, sir. Arizona Post staff and the respondent, Carlos Castaneda Noriega, offer the attached consent agreement for your review and approval. Mr. Castaneda is not represented by counsel and is not present. Mr. Castaneda was employed as a Tucson police officer from July 6, 2018 until September 8, 2020. Between April 29th and 2020 and May 11th, 2020, Mr. Castaneda had two separate contacts with the Glendale Police Department while off duty. During the April 29th incident, Glendale PD responded to a domestic violence incident involving Mr. Castaneda and his girlfriend. An investigation of that incident revealed that his girlfriend had sustained several minor injuries. However, neither party wished to aid in prosecution. Glendale police determined that Mr. Castaneda was the primary aggressor, and they submitted charges to the Glendale City prosecutor, but no charges were filed. 12 days later, on May 11th, Glendale PD again responded to a domestic violence incident with a different former girlfriend and Mr. Castaneda. During that incident, Mr. Castaneda claimed he was assaulted by the former girlfriend, but lied to responding officers about his relationship with the former girlfriend and denying that there was a domestic violence relationship. No charges were filed as a result of this investigation. Mr. Castaneda failed to report the May 11th incident to his chain of command. An internal investigation sustained multiple policy violations, including the commission of an off-duty misdemeanor and failure to notify his supervisor. He resigned from TPE in lieu of termination. The parties to the consent agreement agree that Mr. Hughes' actions are in violation of post rules, and propose the board suspend Mr. Castaneda's peace officer certification for a period of 36 months, beginning retroactively to September 8, 2020, and ending September 9, 2023. This proposal is within the range of permissible discipline, and I am happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Duran. Questions, comments? If not, I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Robinson. I move to accept a proposed consent agreement for a 36-month suspension of peace officer certification beginning September 8, 2020 and ending September 9, 2023.
Thank you, Professor. Do I hear a second?
Mr. Chairman, Chief Vasquez, I second.
Thank you, Chief. Further discussion?
We do have one question. The premise of the suspension is that his certification then would lapse and he would no longer be serving in law and have a certification. Is that correct with that time frame?
Yes, at that time the certification will have lapsed, and if he wishes to engage in law enforcement, have to go through a new certification process, waiver process.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Lord. Question? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next case, 2020-113, Mr. Brechtel.
Thank you, Mr.
Durant.
That'll be me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mark Brackdahl on behalf of the state. The first case is the Starbucks case. In the next three cases, they are all consent agreements. I negotiated all of these on behalf of the state with attorneys. Each of the officers in the next three cases has attorneys. So in the Starbucks case, this is a consent agreement which proposes a suspension to lapse because an officer failed to take appropriate action during the arrest of a suspect who was in medical distress. As far as the parties, Post staff and respondent through his attorney offer the attached consent agreement for your review and consideration. The respondent is Mr. Starbuck. He is a former police officer with the Tucson Police Department. He resigned from the Tucson Police Department in June of 2020, and his certification has been inactive since then. Mr. Starbuck's attorney is Mr. Mike Story, who was unable to be present, but Mr. Story wished that this consent agreement be presented today to the board. As far as the background, on April 21st, 2020, Mr. Starbuck was on duty, and he and other officers responded to a call for service of a suspect who was acting crazy, was on drugs, and had no clothes on. After a physical struggle, the suspect was arrested for a misdemeanor warrant. The suspect was in medical distress, and as far as the degree of distress, it's described in paragraph 3 in the proposed consent agreement. The Pima County Attorney's Office determined that Mr. Stubbert's acts and omissions were not a criminal offense. The medical examiner determined that there was insufficient evidence that Mr. Starbuck's acts and omissions caused the death of the suspect. The parties agree that Mr. Starbuck's actions are in violation of Post rules, specifically Rule 109A8 and A12. The parties propose that the board impose a suspension to lapse. The suspension would begin on June 18, 2020, and end on June 19, 2023. This proposal is within the range of discipline, and a copy of the consent agreement is in your board packet. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Bracker. Questions, comments?
Yeah, I have a comment. I know for the sake of this, to an extent this becomes a formality, we're going to vote on it. I want to explain why I'm going to say nay during the course of this vote. I don't think the officers involved in this thing should have lost their peace officer certification. So I just want to be clear when I vote nay on this that I understand the dynamics that were involved in this case. I've seen it, reviewed it, heard a lot about it, but I just want to be clear as to I this is basically a formality, but why I'd be voting no. My no is not that I think the suspension should be worse or he should be permanently loses or revoked certification. It's because I don't think he should be suspended or revoked.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Ms. White.
If the colonel feels that way in legal counsel, can it not be remanded back to staff to rework the consent agreement?
Yes, in your board packet, there's a number of options available to you. This is not a done deal until the board approves this consent. So you can reject the consent and remand it back to staff. You could come up with new terms. Someone could make a motion to dismiss the matter. Someone could make a motion to do a suspension of a lesser time. So you can have a lot of options sort of accepting the consent.
Mr. Chairman, and Ms. Weiss, if I could, if the board chooses to do that, I'm not saying you're going to, but if you choose to do that, I would please ask that you give us clear direction on what you would like, because again, as Mr. Brackle said, this is an agreement that was worked out between Arizona Post and this officer's attorney. So again, if you have something you'd like us to do differently, just please let us know that so when we go back to Mr. Story, we can meet your needs.
Thank you, Director. Further comments, questions?
I'm concerned on this case. If these officers, I think probably everybody's seen the video, it was heat of the moment. In my mind, they did nothing abusive. They didn't know what they were dealing with. And it became so so politically charged and in a media frenzy that I think these officers were ready to pretty much accept whatever came at them. And I struggle with some of the things I see right now in law enforcement, and this is one of those cases. So I would tell you, can I make a motion?
You can.
May I?
Before you do
go ahead, Joe.
Okay. In before
yeah. There's yeah. a couple yeah. more comments.
Yeah, okay. Right.
Chairman, Joe Perferi, question, if we refer it back to staff, what does that mean?
That means, well, again, I would like clear direction from the board on what you would like us to accomplish. What if any action you'd like us to take against Mr. Starbucks certification? Because, again, if you give it back to us, we will go back to Mr. Story and work out a deal. But, again, we don't want to bring a deal to you or a proposed consent agreement back to the board that you're not going to accept. So, again, if you wanted to remand it back to us to reevaluate and reconnect with Mr. Story, I would ask that you give us clear direction on what you're looking to achieve.
Ms. Weiss.
With that being said, the AGs are always great about telling us that the range of suspension is within the normal time period that's offered in this type of matter. So what, with this three-year window on this case, what would the lesser side of this window be as opposed to the greater side? So 3 years suspension, right?
Correct.
So that's within range for this type of violation. So what would a lesser sentence be that would be fair and equitable, but yet be less time in suspension?
And I'll address that, Mark Brackel. It would be a term, an amount of suspension time, and it would be within the discretion of the board how much less of 3 years it would be. Certainly, if the board is going to vote for it to be less than the punishment which the parties are in agreement of, there's less of a penalty for the officers that are affected. And so the board would have that discretion for something less. What I'm hearing, though, and I'm the advocate here, is that that there seems to be a thought process that this case should never have been initiated on by the board in the first instant. I'm hearing different layers of thoughts. And just stating the obvious, as a lawyer will do once in a while, this board, almost 1 year ago to the day, on April 21st, 2020, voted to charge this officer with these allegations. And it was a product of over a year's time of negotiating to get to this point. So as the advocate, I support the consent agreement as it's written. Thank you.
May I ask a question?
Sure, Mr. John.
Isn't also the effect of this, for whichever counsel I should properly address this to, that the respondent officer, in consultation with his lawyer, could say, okay, well, if that is how the board feels, maybe I'm not even going to do the consent agreement. Let's go ahead and have a hearing and see what happens.
And may I address that? Thank you, Mr. Johnson. So you'll notice in paragraph 3 of your consent agreement, it's 4.5 sentences. Obviously, on a case like this, there is much more. There are hours of body cam video, which are quite dramatic and show how the individual died. And so if this case goes to a hearing, much more what I'm called dramatic testimony. I'll be the advocate. I'll present it. We'll come out, and a judge will weigh whether it's truthful and put it in an ALJ decision, and then it'll come back to the board. And at that time, this may be a revocation case. The state may recommend revocation. At this point, though, it's a suspension to lapse, which is as serious as it can get short of revocation. I have both parties and the other party's lawyer in agreement to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bratchell, and thanks for your work. That's part of the thought when we initiate proceedings on this board is we see concerns, some concerns that could violate our rules, and then more facts come out once you guys start investigating. So I think there's a thought behind us initiating proceedings. And I know the case very well, coming from Southern Arizona. Not that I've been involved with it, just for that statement. But it is. There was many that felt the officers did not do anything in this case. But again, that's why we have the factual research from our you, the advocate, and the counsel, Mr. Story. There is some concerns with this case. I would say that too. And I know that was big talk down in the community where I'm from. So. But again, we do have an agreement, and that's where I know you spent a lot of work on this, but I think it's up to the board membership and how they want to vote. So I will push it back to members for
Mr. Chair, can I make one more comment?
Chair, Mr. Dunson.
I want to say this, too. I think so. The respondent officer has made a decision to enter into this consent agreement in consultation with his attorney, which actually also concludes the matter, correct?
That's correct, Mr. Johnson.
Whereas if something else happens, then the officer, in some jeopardy that more may occur, we'll have to wait to see what happens as well.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, Triple Perry, I move to accept the proposed consent agreement for a 36-month suspension of peace officer certification beginning June 18, 2020, ending June 19, 2023, at which time certification will lapse.
Thank you, Director. Do I hear a second?
Lisa, second.
Thank you, Ms. Weiss. Any further discussion? The following two cases are very similar. They're all in line. So. No more questions. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, signify by saying nay.
Nay.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Second case. Related to this matter, 2021-064. Mr. Braxwell, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. This consent agreement is about a use of force which occurred on July 3rd, 2019. The parties propose a 100-hour suspension because an officer used unreasonable physical force on a juvenile. Specifically, the officer used a pressure point control tactic. As far as the parties, the respondent, Mr. Santiago, is a retired officer with the Mesa Police Department. Mr. Santiago retired with the Mesa Police Department 3 months ago in January 2022. Mr. Santiago's attorney is Mr. Ed Robina, and he is certainly present here today. As far as the incident, this consent agreement is about Mr. Santiago's use of force on July 3rd, 2019. On that date, Officer Santiago was working in patrol and had used a pressure point control tactic during the arrest of a 16-year-old. The 16-year-old was not injured. Subsequently, the Mesa Police Department supervisors reviewed body cam footage of the incident. MPD sustained an allegation of unnecessary use of force and imposed a 20-hour suspension. The name of John Santiago may be familiar to the board, and that is because on October 20th, 2021, this board considered an earlier use of force by Officer Santiago from 2018. And at that time, the board adopted an ALJ decision of excessive force using a pressure point and imposed a 40-hour suspension. That was the discipline meted by this board. And so in summary, we have a prior use of a pressure point that was unnecessary, and we have the subsequent one. Because of that, the parties have met, the attorneys have discussed this, and we propose a 100-hour suspension of Mr. Santiago's peace officer certification from February 1st, 2022, ending February 10th, 2022. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rackel.
Mr. Chair, I have to recuse myself from consideration of this matter.
Let the record be noted. Thank you. Does the other attorney want to speak, other counsel? Okay, I'll let you. Sorry about that. All righty. Any discussion? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Robinson. I move to accept a proposed consent agreement for a 100-hour suspension of peace officer certification beginning February 1, 2022 and ending February 10, 2022.
Thank you, Professor. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Thank you, Colonel. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, signify by saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next case, 2021-140. Mr. Brecker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. This is a consent agreement which proposes an 18-month suspension because while off-duty, an officer caused a car accident while driving impaired. The officer's BAC was .167. The respondent, Mr. Bradshaw, is a former officer with the Avondale Police Department who was terminated by his agency on August 2, 2021. Mr. Bradshaw's attorney is Catherine Bailey, and she is present here today. The attached consent agreement in your board packet reflects the information I just shared. The parties agree that Mr. Bradshaw's actions are in violation of post rules and that the parties propose an 18-month suspension beginning on August 2, 2021 and ending on February 2, 2023. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Rackham. Ms. Bailey, would you want to say something?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I'm Catherine Bailey. I represent Kyle Bradshaw. I am here to answer any questions. I know you have a full docket. If you have any questions for me, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, Bailey. Appreciate it. Any questions, comments? If not, I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move to accept a proposed consent agreement for an 18-month suspension of peace officer certification beginning August 2nd, 2021 and ending February 2nd, 2023.
Thank you, Chief. Do I hear a second?
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Robinson, I second the motion.
Thank you, Professor. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, signify by saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next case, 2020-121. Ms. Heckel. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Arlene Heckel, one of your compliance specialists. This case involves former Trooper Cullen with the Arizona Department of DPS. Here's a quick reminder of the case. In April of 2020, Trooper Cullen was scheduled to work an off-duty job at 2,200 hours. He arrived at a business complex close to the location of the off-duty job early so he could write some reports. He was in full uniform and driving his marked patrol vehicle. A friend of his named Eve texted him to see if she could come visit him. He told her where he was writing reports so she could stop by. When she arrived, they were both outside of their vehicles. They began flirting, and Eve then performed oral sex on him. When the act was finished, he was tucking in his shirt when another DPS vehicle drove through the lot. Trooper Cullen did not know the trooper in the vehicle, but got the vehicle number so he could check. He did not know if the other trooper saw anything or knew what had just happened. Trooper Cullen texted a friend of his, Trooper Johnson, to ask if he knew who the officer was and then explained what had happened. Trooper Johnson notified his chain of command about the possible misconduct by Trooper Cullen. An internal investigation was initiated and Trooper Cullen admitted to the activity. DPS sustained allegations of conduct adverse. Trooper Cullen was a probationary employee, so his probation was revoked and he was terminated on May 6, 2020. The board voted to initiate proceedings on Trooper Cullen's certification at the January 2022 board meeting. Per policy, a letter was sent to former Trooper Cullen's address by certified mail and by regular U.S. mail. The registered letter was delivered on February 14, 2022. The letter that was sent by regular mail was not returned to post. To date, neither former Trooper Cullen or anyone representing him has contacted Arizona Post staff to request a hearing. Based upon the facts of this case, staff recommends the board implement a 12-month suspension of certification beginning January 19, 2022 and ending on January 19, 2023. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Heckel. Questions, comments? If not, I entertain a motion.
Recuse.
For the record, Colonel Recuse. I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Chief Foskis, I move to accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law and suspend Mr. Cullen's peace officer certification for 12 months beginning January 19, 2022 and ending January 19, 2023.
Thank you, Chief.
I second the motion.
Who was it?
John, sir.
Okay. I couldn't hear where that was coming from. Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All
opposed, signify by saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Echo. Next case, 2021-200. Ms. Nichols. Good morning or afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Darcy Nichols, one of your compliance specialists.
The board initiated proceedings against Officer Langley's certification during the February 2022 board meeting. Complaint notices were sent via regular mail and certified mail to Officer Langley's address of record. The notices sent by regular mail was not returned to Arizona Post, and the notice sent by certified mail was delivered to an individual address on February 24, 2022. As of this date, neither Officer Langley nor anyone representing him have contacted Arizona Post to request a hearing. So to briefly summarize this case, Officer Langley was involved in an off-duty domestic violence incident with his family at their residence. During the incident, Officer Langley yelled profanities at family members and wrestled with his 19-year-old stepson. Officer Langley was intoxicated at the time of the incident and was also had the odor of intoxicating beverage emanating from his person when he was taken into custody the following day. Officer Langley entered into a deferred prosecution agreement with the Gilbert City Attorney's Office and Municipal Court. He pled guilty to one count of disorderly conduct, domestic violence, and the charge of threatening and intimidating domestic violence was dismissed. The deferment agreement stipulated that if Officer Langley successfully completed the terms of this agreement, the disorderly conduct charge would be dismissed on October 8th of 2022. Officer Langley resigned in lieu of termination from the Maricopa County Community College District Department of Public Safety on October 29, 2021. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends the board impose an 18-month suspension of his peace officer certification beginning October 29, 2021 and ending April 29, 2023. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Nichols. Questions, comments? If not, I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Robinson. I move to accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law and suspend Mr. Langley's peace officer certification for 18 months beginning October 29, 2021 and ending April 29, 2023.
Thank you, Professor. Do I hear a second?
Jamie Kelly, second.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, they're going to say an aye.
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 All opposed, going to say nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Final action case 2021-230. Ms. Nichols, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Darcy Nichols. The board initiated proceedings against Mesa PD applicant Sherrato during the February 2022 board meeting. Complaint notices were sent via regular and certified mail to applicant Sherrato's address of record. The notice sent by regular mail was not returned to post. The notice sent by certified mail was delivered to an individual at the address on February 25th, 2022. Neither applicant Sherrato nor anyone representing him have contacted Arizona Post to request a hearing. To briefly summarize this case, applicant Sherrato was arrested after being involved in a physical altercation with bar security staff and refusing to leave the bar. This incident took place while applicant Sherrato was in the background process with Mesa PD. Applicant Sherrato failed to inform Mesa PD hiring staff of the arrest and the pending court case, violating his agreement signed on May 27, 2021, stating that he would inform Mesa hiring personnel of any updates to his background information while in the hiring process. Mesa hiring personnel learned of the arrest during the new hire audit when Arizona Post requested a current criminal history printout. Applicant Sherrato's appointment was rescinded. When he was informed of this, applicant Sherrato told Mesa hiring personnel he intended to tell them of the arrest, but was trying to have the charges dismissed first. Applicant Sherrato's court case is still pending. Mesa PD submitted a termination report effective December 9, 2021. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends the board deny peace officer certification to applicant Sherrato. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Nichols. Questions, comments? Not entertain a motion.
Jamie Kelly. I move to accept the findings of facts and conclusions of law and deny peace officer certification to Mr. Sherrato.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Do I hear a second?
Kevin Robbins. It's Kevin Robinson. I'll second the motion.
Thank you, Professor. Yes, fairly. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion, signify saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, signify saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries.